This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Asia Pacific Currents.
News and labour issues from the Asia Pacific region.
We strongly condemn the police that arrest the protesters.
Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock.
On Community Radio 3CR.
Workers of the world should unite to fight this greedy capitalist.
Brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links. Good morning and welcome to Asia Pacific Currents. It's 1 minute past 9 o'clock here on Community Radio 3CR. I'm Giselle Hannah.
And I'm Diana Beaumont. It's good to be back after a break over the summer.
Except the rest of us were back, listeners, last week, as you know, because you were here, but Diana wasn't.
I'm here this week to bring you a roundup of news from the Asia Pacific region about workers' struggles and union events. And then at about 9:15 this morning, we'll be bringing you an interview with Nick McClelland, longtime friend and founder of the Asia Pacific Currents program, who's recently been to New Caledonia or Kanaki, where he attended the Congress of the USTKE Trade Union Confederation and the Congress of the newly formed Labor Party. He'll be bringing us an update about the work of those organisations and the union situation in general in New Caledonia. That coming up at about 9:15 this morning. But of course, Asia Pacific Currents is produced by Australia Asia Worker Links. And if you'd like to get in touch with us during the week, I'll do a Pierre. The phone number, Giselle?
You can ring us on 03966 372 77. You can find us on the web, all the www.aawl.org.au. We're on Facebook and Twitter. And what was the last detail? The email address. You can send an email to aawl@aawl.org.au.
Excellent. Now time for our news roundup. We begin in Indonesia this morning, where on Wednesday of this week, major worker rallies were held in five major cities of the country calling for an increase in the minimum wage. The rallies came after the government of Jakarta increased the minimum wage by 40% at the end of last year to about US $200 a month. And workers across Indonesia are arguing that the economy is growing and workers should receive a fair share of the benefits. These protests are a continuation of the unprecedented mobilizations that were witnessed in Indonesia in 2012, including a general strike of more than 2 million workers. Workers are looking to consolidate the gains of last year and are seeking better healthcare provisions, establishment of a pension fund, more realistic indexing of wages, and freedom in organizing. More demonstrations are planned in the coming months.
I think Indonesia is really interesting at the moment, and as you just described, Diana, the increasing political and industrial action that we saw at the end of last year really suggests that this year there's going to be an intensification of that activity. I think, you know, this is definitely a discussion for AAWL, but we really do need to increase our solidarity with Indonesia, which we haven't had consistent projects in that region for some time.
Yeah, that's right. We saw these quite enormous wage increases by regional standards, 40% last year, and still you have worker mobilisation. So the demands and the political level of that movement are really quite high.
In China, with the coming of the Chinese New Year this year on the 10th of February, industrial disputes increase as workers fight to receive their end-of-year bonuses. Last week, around 1,000 workers employed by the Tokai Rubber Industries staged a protest to complain that their end-of-the-year bonuses have been cut by a third. Police intervened and clashes occurred. At least 10 workers were detained.
And more news from China. It's been reported that the enormous Taiwanese electronics manufacturer Foxconn is preparing to conduct union elections sometime before July this year. The company that's famous for making products for Apple and for most other computer and mobile phone brands has been criticised for its draconian discipline and the high rate of worker suicides. A union has been established at the company since 2007, but it's never held elections and it's not active. But Foxconn has claimed that the company will hold secret ballot elections every 5 years for the union chairman and or chairperson and 20 members of its Federation of Labour Union Committee. The elected union, of course, must be affiliated with the All China Federation of Trade Unions. So that's an event to watch to see if that can be a genuine trade union in a really enormous company that employs almost 1 million workers in China.
In South Korea, as reported in previous news, workers in South Korea are taking ever more desperate measures to counter the pressures they're under. Unfortunately, four trade unionists killed themselves late last year out of hopelessness. One of these, Mr. Chu Gong-si, the organising director of the KMWU, and that is the Korean Metalworkers Union, and he was the organising director of the Hanjin section. And Hanjin was a massive dispute that we talked about extensively on APC. He was one of those organisers. He took his own life due to the anxiety of facing the company's lawsuit for compensation from a previous protest. This week, the KCTU, the Korean Confederation of Trade Unions, staged a rally in which they carried his coffin into the Yeongdo shipyards in Busan to demand for the company to withdraw its lawsuit against the union.
And news on another long-running dispute, the Maruti Suzuki workers in India. The Maruti Suzuki Workers Union organised a nationwide day of solidarity action on the 5th of February to condemn the state repression and to demand the release of arrested workers and the reinstatement of dismissed workers. After the 18th of July 2012 incident in which a manager at the Manesar plant of Maruti Suzuki was killed, workers have been facing intense repression. Currently, 147 workers are in jail without bail for more than 6 months. The union has been deregistered and all the office bearers are in jail. And in response to the 18th of July incident, the Maruti Suzuki management terminated more than 540 regular and nearly 2,300 contract workers. The demonstrations on the 5th of February were only one of a string of rallies and demonstrations across all districts of Haryana and in Delhi, as well as mass hunger strikes and sector-wide solidarity organisation in defence of the Maruti Suzuki workers.
And still in India, the government of the Indian state Rajasthan has improved the compensation given to workers afflicted with the lung disease silicosis. After intense lobbying, the Rajasthan government has agreed to provide these workers with medical, monetary and social benefits, as well as pay compensation to widows of dead workers of 300,000 rupees or $5,500 Australian. Also, the Director General of Mines Safety will issue notices to 27,000 mine owners in Rajasthan, ordering them to provide further information about health and safety to allow for further improvements in health and safety. There are approximately 2.5 million workers employed in mines in the northwestern Indian state of Rajasthan, often working in unsafe conditions. A recent study found that 23% of these workers showed presence of silicosis disease along with associated tuberculosis.
And in Pakistan now, the National Trade Union Confederation and the Pakistan Labour Federation are fighting against aggressive union busting through factory closures. Earlier this year, garment factory Joe's Fashion locked out its workforce of about 1,000 employees in the Kurangi industrial area of Karachi. The owner then transferred all the machinery to a sister company located in an export processing zone guarded by private security. The same owner has recently closed another factory in a similar way, making 4,000 workers jobless. This technique is used to prevent workers from organising unions and from seeking better pay and conditions, and the National Trade Union Federation and the Labour Federation are continuing to fight against this employer.
It's a very, very classic strategy in the race to the bottom, that. In the shipbreaking yards, 2012 saw a record-breaking number of 365 toxic-laden ships sent for breaking by European ship owners to the beaches of South Asia, notably Pakistan, India and Bangladesh. In conjunction with the terrible OHS conditions for workers, this dumping exacts a terrible toll on workers. Greek owners were the number one culprit, dumping 167 ships on South Asian beaches, accounting for nearly half of all ships sent by European ship owners in 2012. The NGO, Shipbreaking Platform, released a statement saying, "Despite the possibility of proper disposal in Europe or other developed countries, the vast majority of European shipping companies continue to profit by having their ships broken cheaply and dangerously on the beaches of South Asia." While workers are trying to organise in Pakistan, India and Bangladesh, there are reports that ship owners are now also targeting China.
And Human Rights Watch has released a report focused on Qatar, detailing how migrant workers comprise a staggering 80% of Qatar's population, and they continue to work in a highly repressive and exploitative system. A ban on trade unions, an employment system akin to bonded labour, and appalling housing conditions are a feature of the so-called Qatar economic miracle. Unfortunately, the situation for workers in Qatar is not an isolated case, as workers in most of the Gulf countries continue to work in oppressive conditions marked by injuries, beatings, imprisonment, and death. A link to that report about Qatar will be on AAWL's website and in our mini news in the coming days. It's 12 minutes past 9 here on Asia Pacific Currents on 3CR Community Radio. Stay tuned. After a brief community announcement, we'll be joined by Nick McClelland, who'll be talking about the union movement in New Caledonia.
If you haven't been watching Channel 31, you've been missing out. Channel 31 is not your average television station. We're your local Melbourne community TV station. With over 120 new programs weekly, Channel 31 is leading the way with quality, diverse programs every month. We have a mass of Melburnians creating great shows across our amazing city. Switch on to Channel 31. There's something for everyone.
Taken a few weeks to build up means that it hasn't made for dramatic pictures on our TV screen each night, and I think that affects how much people pay attention to it.
3CR, in-depth interviews that give a voice to the issues that are often unheard.
There's quite a lot of coal here and potentially people will talk about markets for it. So Martin Ferguson, who's the Federal Energy Minister, is very supportive of it as well. He's famously said that we can make Victoria the next Pilbara.
Friends of the Earth says it won't support a 19th century energy industry in the 21st century. Quit coal, a vital campaign, part of Friends of the Earth Melbourne.
It's 14 minutes past 9 here on Asia Pacific Currents. Last year, journalist Nick McClelland travelled to New Caledonia, where he attended the Congress of the USTKE, Trade Union Confederation, and the Congress of the newly formed Labour Party. And he joins us this morning to talk about the work of these two organisations and about the union movement in New Caledonia, or Kanaki, in general. Nick, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
All right, for those of us who know little about Kanaki or New Caledonia, could you paint a picture for us? What kind of work do local Kanak people do, and what are the major sectors of the economy?
Well, New Caledonia is quite a developed economy by Pacific Island standards. Its major industry is nickel, however. New Caledonia's got about a quarter of the world's nickel reserves. And so nickel mining and nickel smelting is a major industry. And for a long time, the largest union called USO Inc. Had major coverage in that industry. But New Caledonia's also got quite a large manufacturing sector, and because it's a French colony, a French overseas dependency, it's got a fairly extensive public service as well. And so other key sectors are fairly well unionised, including public servants, teachers, nurses, but also people in building and construction and other areas related to mining. So it's quite, compared to many Pacific countries, it's got a very vibrant trade union movement. And the USTKE, as you mentioned, is the second largest trade union confederation in this French Pacific territory.
When you say that it's got those large industries, are you talking in terms of the profit generated from the industries or the number of workers?
Both. In both cases, the gross national income in New Caledonia, because of French subsidies, but also because of the nickel industry, they have a higher per capita income than New Zealand. So it's a very wealthy country by Pacific Island standards. But it's also got strong traditions based on the French political tradition of unionism. So USTKE has, it's a confederation of unions, and it covers 11 different sectors, from mining and transport to public service, teachers, nurses, a lot in the retail sector, banking. It's got a very wide coverage. And in the French tradition, unions are more politically aligned and also compete within an enterprise or a workplace. So you might have one workplace that is very heavily aligned to one trade union confederation rather than the other. And so, for example, the airport in New Caledonia, USTKE has the majority on the Workplace Enterprise Board, and so USTKE basically runs the airport, the main international airport, at all sectors.
What's the population of Kanaki?
It's about 245,000 people. The indigenous population, the Melanesian population, are known as Kanaks, and they only make up about 45% of the population. There's been a lot of migration from France, going back to colonial days, and that's ongoing with many people fleeing the economic turmoil currently in Europe. And because it's French territory, they can move to New Caledonia easily. There's also a significant Wallisian population. These are people from Wallis and Futuna, which is another French Pacific territory. And today there are more Wallisians working in New Caledonia than there are living in Wallis. People migrated since the 1960s and 70s, the nickel boom at that time. And so there are many Wallisians. They make up about 10% of the population now in New Caledonia. So the indigenous Kanaks are a minority. And that's one feature that USTKE has a largely Kanak membership. It's a multiracial organisation. Its leadership includes French, Wallisian, people of all ethnicities. But it's got a lot of support from the indigenous Kanaks, who by and large support political independence for New Caledonia.
Right, we'll talk more about the USTKE Trade Union Confederation. What are its main work programs and where does it sit on the political spectrum?
Like all unions, it's focused on day-to-day workplace issues, around major struggles around workplace wages and conditions, a major campaign around occupational health and safety, a significant push for representation. One of the issues is, of course, as everywhere, a fairly low representation in some industries. So there's a lot of work done as organising. But one feature that distinguishes USTKE from most other unions in New Caledonia is it's taken from its founding a position in support of independence. So it's taken quite overt political positions in solidarity with international trade union rights and this question of sovereignty and independence. In 2014, there'll be the next congressional elections in New Caledonia, and after that, the country will decide whether it will move to a referendum on independence. Mm-hmm. So we're entering a period where this overt political stance by the union, and indeed its links to political parties, is becoming more and more important.
Right. Well, you attended the Congress of the New Labour Party. Tell us about the Labour Party and what role has that had in pushing for this referendum on independence that's due in 2014?
About 5 years ago, USTKE, which was, you know, a trade union organisation, decided that its views weren't being represented in the coalition government that governs New Caledonia at the moment. in 1998 after troubles during the 80s. A peace deal was signed between supporters and opponents of independence, and there's a multi-party government. But that's dominated by French conservative anti-independence parties, and many of them are linked to the business community. So as trade unionists, the USTKE members, felt that they weren't getting their voice carried into the political sphere. And that's why, although they support independence, they also believe there was a need for a Labour Party that would represent the interests of working people. And so in 2007, the Parti Travailliste, the Labour Party, was created. It's a bit more radical than the Labour Party in Australia, in spite of the name. It's very much committed to issues of workers' rights. And although it's the youngest and smallest party, it's grown very rapidly over the last 5 years. It now has representatives at all tiers of government in New Caledonia, a lot of local councillors elected under the Parti Travailliste banner. It has members of the provincial assemblies in the North and Loyalty Islands, two of the three provinces in New Caledonia, four members in the National Congress, which is about 8% of the National Congress. And it also, because of that, has a representation in the multi-party government. Ironically, the Minister for Labour comes from the Labour Party. Georges Mandouet, who's actually a traditional chief as well, is representing the government on issues of industrial relations, trade union rights. And for the Labour Party, this has been a real opportunity to push forward agendas that represent issues that the USTKE as a trade union is concerned about.
And what gains has the Labour Party made through having this Minister for Labour? Has there been pro-worker reform in Kanaki in recent years?
It's coming slowly. He only took up the position a year ago, 18 months ago. There's major works around what's called IRP, which is the representation of workers in the workplace, as the battle in Australia under Fair Work Australia versus the Work Choices sort of reforms about union rights to entry, about union representation in workplace dialogue, tripartite bodies having appropriate union representation on legal issues related to health and safety, wages, conditions and so on. It's a fairly major breakthrough, and there's a number of key union people working with Georges Mandouet, the minister, to advance some core trade union demands around workplace health and safety.
Right. We see in the Pacific and in many parts of the global south that there's a very exploitative relationship between multinational mining companies and the workers and the indigenous population. What's the relationship between mining companies and workers in New Caledonia?
It's been an area of contradiction because one feature of the current political situation in New Caledonia is that for a long time, the mining and smelting of nickel and other strategic minerals in New Caledonia has been dominated by Société Le Nickel, SLN, which was a country created in the late 19th century. SLN has largely been controlled by the French government. About 25% of the shares are still managed by the French government's Strategic Investment Fund. And so SLN has largely represented the interests of France rather than the local community.
And is a large proportion of the profit then taken back to the metropolis, taken back to France and taken out of New Caledonia?
And a lack of investment to keep New Caledonia's smelting capacity, for example, up to the to global standards. And the only smelter, Doniambo, which is in the capital, Noumea, has been there since the 60s. What's been a feature of current politics is that there are two new nickel smelting and processing plants being constructed, one in the south at a place called Goro, and most importantly, one in the north, in the northern province, which is dominated by the Kanaks. The indigenous Kanaks live in the north and the Loyalty Islands provinces to a large part. And the northern smelter is a joint venture between the local provincial authorities and the giant UK-Swiss-based company Xstrata, which is one of the major minerals companies in the world. So you have the contradiction where the USTKE has supported the development of the northern processing plant and all of the infrastructure that goes with it as a way of breaking the French monopoly over the nickel industry. But at the same time, as trade unionists, there's a lot of concerns about Xstrata's policies related not just to workplace issues, but also to the environment and managing the environment. So the USTKE and indeed the Labor Party have taken up issues around the development. While they're broadly supportive of this major project, it's a $5 billion project going ahead in the Northern Province. At the same time, the unions are also concerned about the rights for trade unions, the impact on local communities, environmental and workplace safety. Those sorts of questions are pretty central. And that's where the USTKE wants the Labor Party to provide an independent voice, where the majority of the independence movement want these sort of projects to go ahead.
We're speaking to Nick McClellan, a journalist who's recently returned from the Congress of the USTKE Trade Union Confederation in Kanaki or New Caledonia. One notable feature of this Congress was the role of women in the USTKE Trade Union. Can you speak more about that?
Yeah, the leadership of USTKE has really changed in recent years. For a long time, from the founding in 1981, was led as president by a guy called Louis Couturier, who's a leading trade unionist, now actually the president of the Labour Party. His replacement, Gérard Jourdain, was a French trade union activist who caused a lot of division within the unions. And in 2010, Jourdain was replaced by a woman named Marie-Pierre Goyetch. And today, the leadership of the USTKE, out of the top five positions, the president and four vice presidents, three out of the five are women. And so, as is the case in many trade unions, this has brought a number of issues to the fore that had been downplayed in the past, particularly about the rights of women in the workplace, issues of sexual harassment and equity for women in terms of wages, in terms of promotion and career opportunities. There's a lot of gender segregation in the workplace. For example, mining is largely blokes in New Caledonia. But in other sectors, particularly in teaching, in the retail sector, in the public service, women have come to the fore in the trade union movement. And so you have a number of strong Kanak women who are in the leadership of the USTKE, and that's reflected in their involvement, not just in workplace issues, but in broader questions and the whole debate that the trade unions have taken up about work-life balance, the rights of Kanak women to engage in work, particularly in rural areas where many women still live in rural village settings. These sorts of issues have come to the fore. So although its core work is bread and butter trade unionism, USTKE has a much broader political agenda, and not just on the independence question, but on questions of women's rights, of citizenship, of the challenges for New Caledonia. And both the USTKE and the related Labor Party have been calling, their slogan is Kanaki 2014. They're trying to mobilise young people to vote for the next congressional elections in 2014 to put this issue of independence, sovereignty and workers' rights on the agenda.
Right. Well, Nick, I'm afraid that's all we've got time for this morning. We've been speaking to Nick McClellan, a journalist who's recently returned from New Caledonia. Nick, thanks so much for joining us this morning for that report.
Thanks for the chance to speak on 3CR.
Oh, you're welcome. It's now 29 minutes past nine, so it's all we've got time for this morning on Asia Pacific Currents, but a few announcements, or one announcement, before we head out for this morning.
Just a couple of things. Firstly, Nick McClellan will be speaking at an upcoming public meeting of AAWL to discuss these issues of trade unions in Kanaki, but also how we can increase our solidarity levels with the unions in Kanaki, but also across the Asia Pacific. It's a really important announcement for those of you who aren't aware. A fascist from the Netherlands, Geert Wilders, is descending on Melbourne on Tuesday the 19th. He's actually on a world tour to step up a campaign against what he's calling orthodox or extreme Islam. But as we all know, this is basically an attack on Islam. It's very anti-Muslim, anti-migration views. And we want to send a clear message that those views aren't welcome. He's been invited by the Q Society. At the moment, the venue is being kept secret, basically to prevent a counter-demonstration. We know for sure that the meeting's being held on the 19th of February. Even the people that have been invited to attend the dinner where he's speaking don't know the venue. The venue will be released, we're told, a day or so before the meeting, before the actual event. We're calling on all hospitality workers to raise the alarm if they hear that Wilders will be speaking at their venue and to notify the protesters. And if anyone else gets an inkling, please tell us. We need to know that there is, or we need to show that there's a strong opposition to the racist bile Wilders is trying to spread. So you can let 3CR know, or you can let any activists know, or trades hall know. We're all trying to mobilise against this fascist who's descending on Melbourne. That is all we've got time for. The Connollys are breaking down the door, so we need to get out of here.
But thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week for another roundup of news from the Asia Pacific region. I'm Diana Beaumont.
I'm Giselle Hannah.
And stay tuned to 3CR for the rest of the day.